Here, we're going to do a little test. Does this make... Can you hear me? Okay?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Good.
All right, perfect. All right, this is Joel Bowers interviewing Reverend Catherine Houchins for the Southwest Virginia LGBTQ History Project Oral History Initiative. We are sitting in the Metropolitan Community Church of Roanoke on the 11th of March, 2019. So, Reverend... Where were
Catherine's
you born?
Fine.
Catherine's fine.
Catherine's fine.
Perfect. Where were you born?
I was born here in Roanoke, and my family moved around. I actually lived in Woodstock for a little bit, but I grew up in Christiansburg, up the road near Blacksburg.
That's awesome. So how long did you live in Blacksburg?
In Christiansburg. I lived there until I went to college when I was 18, and then I went to Bluefield College, which is a Baptist college, for 2 years, and then went down to Tennessee to Carson Newman, which is also a Baptist college, for 2 years.
Interesting. What did you study in college?
My major was English and Education. I had a minor in religion.
Nice.
And I taught for 6 years in parochial Baptist Christian schools.
Wow. Interesting. And, so did you grow up in Blacksburg area?
I grew up there until I went to college when I was 18 and have seldom been back to live there at all, except for a couple of weeks one time.
And how was your college experience? What led you to want to do education and also religion?
Well, I think that probably the education was something my parents had really pushed. You know, neither of them graduated from high school. And it was never if you go to college, it was when you go to college. And so teaching seemed to be an obvious thing. I did not want to be a nurse. And at that time, 50 years ago, a lot of women were not jumping into being doctors and such. So I got into education. I grew up in the church from the time I was 3, so religion was always a part of my life, my experience. Had some great teachers at Bluefield. I had a Dr. Delgado and in Carson Newman, Dr. Bill Blevins, who was just amazing. And it just was a natural fit.
That's nice. So you said that you grew up in the church since you were 3. How was that? Like, what?
Well, I have to say,
denomination
it was a Baptist, a Southern Baptist church.
Okay.
And I have to say that in that, again, that time period, homosexuality was not discussed much in any area, but even in church. It was a fairly moderately conservative congregation. They did not allow women, of course, to be deacons or preach, but they let me speak often. But you just couldn't say that you were preaching. You spoke.
Okay.
And so it was a good experience. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about public speaking. I received a lot of positive feedback from people when I did speak. And I have no trouble speaking in front of any size group.
Nice. And how was it growing up religious? And
Well, I was kind of, might be called Kathy Christian. I was a real sweet little girl.
Okay.
I didn't get in trouble. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. Mainly because my parents smoked, and I never wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And if I ever got caught drinking, I'd probably be put under the house. And so it wasn't a part of my experience. I, of course, was not out. At that time, a lot of young people weren't aware. If you did, you had other thoughts about it. I didn't have any sort of LGBT experience until after my junior year of college.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a struggle then. People just assumed I didn't date a lot because I was such a little church girl.
Interesting. You mentioned that it wasn't until your junior year of college that you had any experience with LGBTQ. What was it like growing up? I can imagine it was lonesome knowing you were gay, but not being able to express it or be yourself.
Well, I had a lot of friends.
Okay.
And again, I'm not sure that term really came to my mind. It was just not something that came to my... People didn't talk about it. And if they did, it was, you know, that guy over there, you know, and that sort of thing. I knew I was different. I knew I was different from like six or seven, but I didn't have any concept, didn't have any words for it. Had lots of crushes on girls that, of course, went nowhere and was not even acknowledged. I was working in a camp, a summer camp for the youth group, the summer of my junior year, summer after my junior year, and fell head over heels in charge with the director, who was 12 years older than I, and just got very involved in her life, barely made it out of college because of that, and we were together for almost 8 years.
Really? Mm-hmm. And how was that, did that affect any of your religious views?
It didn't interfere with any of my religious views because I always knew that God loved me. Yeah. And that God accepted me. One of the good things about the Baptist faith is they teach you this internal authority between me and God. And I knew that was a clear, open path. That was good. The problem those 8 years was being extremely closeted. I don't think either of us ever said gay. And I know we didn't say lesbian. You know, any of that whatsoever. No acknowledgement whatsoever. Verbally. And so that was always kind of a thing with me. I mean, we lived together. We're teaching Christian schools, and we're 12 years apart. But it was always Miss So-and-so and Kathy. And there was, you know, there obviously was an awareness of some connection there. So the closet got really tight. And in 1978, I was teaching in New Jersey. And I went to a conference for Christian school teachers. And one man said, I can't imagine ever doing anything in my life other than teaching in Christian schools. And my brain screamed, not me, not me.
Really?
And shortly thereafter, I walked into our apartment in New Jersey, and I always look up when I say this because the radio was on top of the refrigerator. And the radio was on, and they were just announcing that Harvey Milk had been killed in November 1978. I didn't know who Harvey Milk was, never heard of him. But my spirit knew when I heard that, I had a connection. Yeah. And shortly thereafter, I began making plans to move back to Virginia, to leave that relationship. I couldn't stand the walls, and it just that's like my little watermark time, November 1978.
Wow. So you found as time went on that it was too much to be that closeted, to
yes.
be that intimate with her, but not being able to.
No one knew.
Well,
we had no.
Yeah.
I didn't know any gay people. I didn't know any LGBT, and there wasn't even a Q at that time. I didn't know any of folks. When I moved back to Virginia, I moved back to Portsmouth, Virginia, where I'd lived before. And again, I didn't know anyone. I started out working in a truck stop part-time to get some money to survive. And a friend of mine that I made there was a gay man. And he began telling me about Metropolitan Community Church. And for 3 years, he pushed me to go until I finally went. But he introduced me to some people. I came out to my... I later got a job at the public library. I came out to my boss there because there was a young man there who was flamingly queer. Mm-hmm. And I knew that one day someone was going to say something to and or about him. And I didn't want to get caught in the backwash. Well, what about her? So I went to my boss and said, and she just laughed. I've never had anybody say, yeah, I knew. It's always a surprise to people from my past. But anyhow, so I came out into her and then slowly began working into the community there in Portsmouth.
In Portsmouth, Virginia?
Portsmouth, Virginia, yes.
Whereabouts is that?
It's near Norfolk, near Virginia Beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And after I got involved in the church then, my first pastor, I was called to a church in Ventura, California, which is just north of Los Angeles, and had a delightful 11 years out there. Would love to be there today if I won the lottery.
If you won the lottery. If we all could win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
So, you mentioned it took 3 years for him to get you to go to church. What was the reason? Was it because of your foundation in a Baptist church and not wanting to leave Baptist, or?
I wasn't going anywhere those 3 years.
Oh, really?
At all. The churches I had been involved with before, when I'd lived in that area before, They were all pretty strict, and I was very careful not to out my former partner, like I didn't use her name a while ago. Mm-hmm. And when the word got out, they would often come to my door and try to re-save me. And so I was just avoiding it all.
Yeah.
I also didn't go to Metropolitan Community Church because I'd heard very little about it. All I knew that it was a church where a lot of gay people went. And in my mind, it was like, I'm not sure. So when I finally decided, I was at a real low place and decided I had to do something, I would go. The church was in Norfolk, and there was a street, a body of water called the Hague, and the church. And I would go before that church started and sit and watch across the water to see what kind of people were going in there. And after about 3 weeks of that, I finally got my nerve and went over there.
And what were you looking for in particular?
I think I wanted to see if they looked like regular people. I know that sounds so strange.
That's not strange.
I was looking to see if anyone carried a Bible in. I was looking to see how many people were going in, men, all women. What was the case there? I have a little bit of statistics in the back of my head all the time, yeah. Checking out groups. And so I just wanted to see what was all that. And the first three Sundays I went, the minute it got close to the ending, because I looked in the bulletin and they would join hands and sing the Lord's Prayer, I didn't want anybody touching me. Not because they were gay, because I was so internalized. Mm-hmm. I would leave right before that. The third Sunday, the pastor chased me down the steps and said, "You, come back here. Who are you? You laugh at the right places. You know when I'm talking about stuff in the Bible. Who are you?" And that person was my first ever female pastor, my first ever African-American pastor, and of course my first lesbian pastor. I was scared to death. I stopped and talked to her very quickly. So yeah, I didn't have any trouble aligning myself and God. Jesus had been in my life forever. But I wasn't sure that there were that many other people who'd also had that experience. Not judging those things. I didn't know there were others. And then later on, long story I won't get into right now, we were in the newspaper, and one man came running in one Sunday, literally ran in the church. His name was James, and he said, "I saw this article, and I thought I was the only gay Christian in the world." Now again, this is like 1982, 83. And it was wonderful that he found us. But he had been living for years. He was probably about 40 at that time. He'd been living for years thinking he was the only gay Christian in the world.
That's one way.
Mm-hmm.
And then to find this community. Yeah, it's definitely possible. That's for sure. That's awesome. So, that was how you got involved with MCC. Mm-hmm. How did you end up getting into Los Angeles?
That's where my first church was just north of Los Angeles.
Oh, and how'd you get to?
Well, they sent out these little flyers. I had become licensed as clergy. It's the step they did. I was ordained. The denomination had ordained me as clergy. The Metropolitan Community Church denomination. We have churches all over the world. And I had gone through a bunch of classes and tests and things, and I'd been ordained. And churches, when they're looking for a pastor back in that day, before the internet, they would send out flyers. And I picked up one that had come to our church. And at that time, I really liked collecting eagles. Our God is like an eagle, and on eagle's wings, and all that stuff. And this, I looked at this folder, and I thought, okay, that's nice. And at the very bottom, there was an eagle. And I thought, okay. Never expected to go across the country. But that's how I got into Los Angeles, and from there I got into some groups there that actually took one of the schools had classes, one of the churches had a school, the MCC churches, actually took a class on Lesbian 101, and lots of different groups, hearing different groups speak and be involved there. So like I said, I was still there for 11 years. Time came to come back. My parents were getting older, and came back to Virginia. At that time, I had not been in the ministry for a couple of years, so I wasn't really coming back to a church. Ended up working at a home for mentally challenged adults down in the eastern part of the state. Got back into the MCC there that I'd been before. Started coming here to Roanoke once a month to preach. They were without a pastor, And once a month, my partner and I would drive out here to speak. They met at the Unitarian Church at that time at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's an odd Sunday service.
Very.
Were you able to have many people come? Usually the vegetarian.
I think that about that time, there would be like 15, 20 people who were looking, knew MCC and were looking. The church was founded here in 1986, which was the same year I moved to California.
Oh, really?
And I remember telling the denominational leaders before the church was founded, I said, I don't know any gay people in Roanoke, but I know there have to be some there. I can smell them when I go by, you know, just laughing and teasing. But so shortly, and I would tell people, you got to find some people in Roanoke. And so shortly after that, by the time I went to California, the church here was formed. So I came out here to preach and decided I wanted to get back into ministry. So I began, was called as the full-time pastor here in 1998. And I was here for almost 10 years.
Wow.
Got real involved in the community, very involved in Pride back in the day and other groups. We used to have a group called ISM, Interfaith Sexual Minorities. And we would hold a big forum every year. We had Bishop Spong.
About when was this?
2005, 2006 maybe.
Okay.
Mary Banky, I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She used to be really big in the community here. She had a daughter who was lesbian and then was trans. She would get this together. It involved Unitarian Church and just a couple of others. And we would have different speakers in. Jimmy Creech, who was a Methodist minister that was defrocked for performing gay marriages, he came and spoke once. So involved in things like that. Then, of course, when the shooting happened in 2000, I was very much put front and center because there wasn't a diversity center. There wasn't a contact person. And since MCC was the main person, main group, yes, so immediately got lots of interviews and things, which I made very clear I couldn't speak for the community. If you might want to go back and research that some, you can Google and find out lots about it there.
Yeah, definitely.
That was even interviewed on NPR.
Really?
Yes. He tried, the interviewer, whose name I don't remember, kept trying to say, but isn't this going to put everybody back in the closet? And I said, well, that might happen, but that's not what's happening here. Because our church experienced a tremendous growth after that. Those people found out we were here.
And hard times bring people together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I conducted the funeral for the gentleman who was killed. And at that time, there was media everywhere. And again, it showed Roanoke in a good light because we didn't riot. We didn't tear down things. We didn't get into... We presented as a community. Presented as a community. It was sad, horrible, and phenomenal times all at once.
Yeah.
In fact, Richard, whom you were going to interview,
yeah.
I'm sure you've heard of Matthew Shepherd.
Yes.
And there was a group that at his service would put on angel wings to protect the family and whatever. Richard got people together and had them construct wings and be at the funeral for that. And he was in charge of pulling that together.
Wow. What a strong community. That's
it
awesome.
It can be.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's in Norfolk, Ventura, Los Angeles, or here, if all of the communities within the community could come together, it would be a phenomenal force. But there's lots of splintering.
A lot of diversity.
Splintering. Diversity is lots of groups. Splintering is when the groups can't, in my mind, when the groups can't come together.
Can't.
It's just an old lady talking here.
Oh, I get it. So, you mentioned that you were down in Southern Virginia working at a mentally handicapped...
Mentally challenged adults. I was the chaplain.
You were the chaplain, and so that's why you weren't in the ministry for 3 years?
I had taken some time off.
Okay.
That was during, I was in California in the late 80s, early 90s as a pastor, and that was during the time when AIDS was rampant.
Yeah.
And in 4 years, I buried 25 friends. And I probably performed in those 4 years another 50 to 100 funerals for people who just needed a pastor. That took a tremendous toll.
I can only imagine.
And I had a hard time even letting God lead me back into ministry. And I surely had a hard time falling back in love with my gay men brothers because I had buried so many. And I've always been a pastor as an equal female-male congregation, so it's not like I'm a separatist. But that hurt made me hesitant to want to renew those bonds. So I took some time off. I don't want to say I was burned out. I was just used up.
Emotionally tried.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what having the 3 funerals in this last two weeks, has brought back some of that memory.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It's never easy to bury the ones that you love, for sure.
And it's a blessing that God's given me a gift that if a family somewhere needs me to help with the funeral, I'm very comfortable stepping in, getting to know them, and doing it. When I was in Charlotte, I was there for 8 years. 2 different couples in my church ran funeral homes. And whenever they had people who did not have a pastor, they would ask me to come and be with the family and conduct their service. And because of the experience I had in the 80s and 90s, I was very comfortable quickly connecting and being able to share that.
Yeah. So when you came to Roanoke, how were you able to become minister here at Roanoke?
Well, because my denomination was licensing. My license was good anywhere. My ordination was good anywhere in the denomination. And this was an MCC. And so there was just, they called me and they voted on me and brought me.
Oh, cool.
And right not long after I got here was when the gentlemen were arrested in the park for talking about soliciting. I don't know if you're familiar with that case or not.
No, could you refresh me just a second?
I'm trying to get some time frame in. I think it was around 2000. The police did a sting in a local park, and they arrested 12 or 13 men for talking about having sex. And supposedly in the state of Virginia, I was told that talking about a felony is a felony.
Really?
And so they were taken to court. Sam Garrison was their lawyer. Sam is no longer here, but he was one of the main lawyers in the Watergate hearings, way ancient history. And he was a lawyer here in town, and he was in charge of these gentlemen. And of course, I was trying to work with them, and I got called to testify before the courts here about, I'm not quite sure what. He called me as a witness to talk about being able to be fully human and gay, and life, liberty, his thing was life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness was his battle cry. And I'll never forget when the Commonwealth attorney came to talk to me. First of all, he said, Miss Houghton. I said, that's Reverend, please. And then he said, how many times have you had sex? I was thinking, what?
A personal question.
And then he said, how many times have you had sex in a park? And I'm going, I'm still looking. He said, in Virginia. And I said, oh, good. Never.
In Virginia. Oh.
But that was such this. And that was the week before my partner and I were headed to California for a big conference. My parents were still living in Christiansburg. They got the Roanoke Times. They always watched WDBJ. So before I went to court that day, not knowing how it was going to happen, I had to basically come out to my parents officially.
Yeah.
Especially my father. And when I told him the situation, and he said, well, a felony, if we're talking about a felony, that's a stupid law. He didn't even go into the other.
Really?
You know. So that got me real involved also in the community because of standing up and representing us at that time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the support or the your father's response really helped.
It was very positive. It was the only time in my whole life that we ever talked about LGBT issues.
And from then on, was it the only time?
There was never any time after that. He died about 12, 13 years ago. So there were, you know, a bunch of years.
Yeah.
We never talked about it.
And your mother?
My mother was interesting because when I first came out to her, when I was in Norfolk way back, I'm jumping around.
Oh, so you came out to her
in a letter.
Okay.
In a letter. And her first comment when she talked to me was, if you'd only told me, we could have gotten you help. And I said, I don't need any help. And she went on and on. And I finally said, Mom, do you want me to tell you the people that come in the grocery store where you work every day that I've had crushes on? That kind of stopped that. She finally came to hear me preach. I was visiting from California and was asked to preach at MCC here. And I invited her and two of my aunts. And the aunts came. And my mom and I were driving home back to Christiansburg from being here. And she looked at me and she said, there should have been more people there to hear you. Which I took as a sort of a left-handed compliment.
Yeah.
The fact that, A, she thought there might have been more gay people in Roanoke, but also that, you know, she was complimenting that. And she came to hear me preach twice. She died about a year and a half ago. She came here to hear me preach twice when I was here 10 years ago. Yeah. And she was uncomfortable, but she came. And in our church, we serve communion every Sunday.
Yeah.
And both times, all three times that she was at MCC, she came to me for communion.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Very poignant.
Oh, how special. And
so one of the things they asked me when I came here to be the pastor the first time, mm-hmm. one of the gentlemen said, now, your parents live 30 miles up the road, 35 miles up the road. Are you going to be able to be out with our church? And I said, I'm called to be your pastor. And I'll be everything I have to be. My parents will have to deal with that. Because I'd been in that closet so long before, there's no way. There's no way I can walk back in a closet.
No. Mm-mm.
And I can't be an MCC pastor. Not that MCC is all about LGBTQ.
Of course.
It's a Christian church, and a good number of our folks are. We have a couple of heterosexual families that have begun coming, mm-hmm. along with other heterosexual folks. But there's no way that if I'm going to be authentic, that I could be a pastor here and deny who I am in all the things I am.
As you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
As nobody should.
Exactly. But you know, there are a lot of churches out there with very closeted pastors, not MCCs necessarily. And of course, the recent thing with the Methodist Church is making it really hard on Methodist pastors who are closeted.
Yeah. I believe it happens everywhere. It's just...
this one's been really public.
Yeah. Everything hits the fan eventually, I
mm-hmm.
believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, Southern Baptists have been through it many times. They're going through the sex scandals now. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church. You know, it's just... it's an inability for people to be who they are. Be who they are both in gender identity, in to whom they are attracted to whom they want to be with. To be who they are, where they stand on biblical issues, not just those few verses. To be who they are about social issues. And people just are hesitant to just be themselves. The person you see sitting here talking to you is the person you'll see in that pulpit on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do that duality.
Yeah, live a double life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
We're not supposed to live in lies. So, in your time in Roanoke, from becoming, well, even growing up here, what would you say, I mean, I know a lot of things have changed, and what would you say is the biggest change?
Well,
a couple biggest changes.
In the LGBT community, or?
LGBT community, or the Roanoke's perception of it, and the community aspect of it.
Well, I think Roanoke is slowly realizing they're not a little railroad town. And they're not just all white sliced bread.
Yeah.
When I left here to go to California in 1986, there were very few ethnic restaurants. No nice big chain restaurants. And when I came back, it was like, oh my goodness. Look at Tanglewood. That was brand new when I came back. But I think that what I've seen in the basic 20 years that I've been associated here is that the LGBTQ community has gained more personhood, more ability to speak out and be involved in other things, although this community was more out than some I've lived in way back then. I came to my first Pride, came up from Norfolk to go to Pride here one time when I first heard about the church being here. That was probably in about 1997, 8. And it was then in one of the parks, I don't remember which, but a smaller park. It really was a little picnic.
Yeah.
Okay, with a few booths and things. And I remember driving through the park, and I wish I could call the name of the man, call to mind the name of it. Had one driveway, okay? You know, one driveway in circle. And about every third car had a big old rainbow on it.
Really?
And I thought, oh my goodness, don't they know people are going to drive around here and see this? And there's only one way out? But, it was a great time. And I just saw Pride just grow so much through the late 90s and early 2000s. It was a real exciting time. We had name brand people coming in to be speakers and entertainers. And so I've seen some of that falter a little bit, it appears, lately. I think that more people now than even 20 years ago are comfortable presenting who they are.
Definitely.
I can remember I had a rainbow ring, and I was a little nervous about wearing that. One time I was in an elevator with a lady, and I had a necklace on that had rainbow rings on it. And she said, oh, the rainbow, like Noah. And I said, yes, ma'am, but it also stands for the gay community. And just, you know, but several of my friends would have fallen over if they heard me say that back then. I like the fact there's a diversity center. I love the fact there's the library. When Ed Harris first received the books that began the library, it was housed in our church for a long time. I, at various times, gone through my library and given a lot of things there, and I look forward to the day when one day that's open and accessible to more people. So many of young people today, even though things are much more open about LGBT issues, there's a lot of history they don't know.
Oh, definitely.
And there's a lot of, not just history, but varied experiences. And sometimes you get that through books. I was a reference librarian for a while, too. You get that from books that you may not ever experience. Patricia Neal Warren died about a month ago. She was one of the first popular gay book writers. And I say gay because it was just men. She was in public libraries. And my brain was so fogged that the first time I read Front Runner, which is all about a gay boy and his coach, mm-hmm. I missed the whole storyline. And my library friend gave it to me to read. I thought, wait a minute, I read the back of the book after I found it. Let me read this again. So there are things like that you learn through reading, whether you have the experience or not. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
Yeah.
Of course, there are more churches that use open and affirming in their publicity.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that there are more that have that in their publicity. But when you start talking to them, how far does that go? Will they let you come sit in their pews? Of course. Will they let you donate money? Of course. Sometimes they'll let you sing in their choir. And many of them have us playing their instruments when they don't even know it. But will they marry you? Will they bless your babies? Will they bury you with your true authentic self? And more churches are coming to that. I'm not being selfish about this. And we have several communities here in town that are in that process. But I get a little bothered sometimes when a church in this neighborhood has a sign out front and says, all welcome. And I know all are not welcome.
Yes.
But it's not my calling to go knock on their door and say, excuse me, your sign's wrong. What my job is to make sure that people know these doors are open and that everyone's welcome.
I think that's very evident from everything I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned to a couple people that I'm coming here to do an interview, and all great things have been said.
Well, now, let's be real. There are going to be some people that say,
well,
haven't you heard about that church?
Oh, of course.
And my line after that is, come try us anew. Come try us again.
What would you say NCC's role is in the community?
I would like to hope that we're seen as a place of peace, a place of encouragement, a place of hope, a place where you can come literally just as you are. We're also seen in this neighborhood as a very active food pantry. We have a food pantry open one day a week. Last Thursday, in 2 hours, we served 20 people, which fed 56 people. Wow. Non-perishable goods. They come in and they pick out from the shelf in categories what they need. I hope it's seen as that. We're also seen as a meeting place, the Diversity Center. There's a very large NA meeting on here in here on Sundays. I would like it to become more and more a place where groups can come together. I also want it to be known as a place that if you have a spiritual need, whether that's to talk, to pray, to marry you, to bury you, that we're here too.
And how has your perception changed through growing up in Blacksburg?
Christiansburg.
How do I keep getting...
Because I said it was near Blacksburg, because people know tech.
Yeah. So in Christiansburg, how would you say you have fully changed since then to now?
I'm much more open and comfortable in my own skin.
Really?
I'm okay if people acknowledge all that I am. If not, I went to a high school reunion and most people didn't want my partner to go with me at that time. Most people didn't ask if I was married or if I had children because they knew in one way or another. I did have one teacher, my typing teacher. He said, "Are you still preaching?" Because of having been in the paper with the shooting thing. And I thought that was really great. My 50th high school reunion is coming up. Mm-hmm. And they're putting together a little booklet. And they did not leave a place for what you're doing now. And I asked about it. And I added my thing. She said, "Oh, of course, we would have asked about that with everybody. But we know you're a preacher." So I can appreciate that. Nobody's going to use those letters, you know. But I see that for me, the change has been is that I had a good foundation, especially spiritually, but I had a good foundation. I was taught early on that you are who you are. The people that taught me that didn't know all the parts of that, but they taught me that. And from that, I was able to grow into, hopefully, who I am today. Be comfortable with being that for me, not requiring it for you, for anyone else, but being able to meet you where you are and help you to get to where you want to be on all levels, not just religious levels. Mm-hmm. Does that answer what you were asking about?
Yeah. What would you say has been the biggest struggle for you in Roanoke in dealing with... And this is in all aspects of just being gay in the area or being religious and gay or just, you know, the area in general.
One of the struggles is knowing when it's necessary, important, valid to bring up any of that.
Yeah.
Another is to be able to do it in a way that will create understanding, not alienation.
Yes.
I don't wear a big L on my chest saying, "By the way, my name is Catherine, I'm a lesbian." I don't deny that. This sort of goes back to another dynamic real quick. You may have heard of Mel White, and he used to have a group that would go to various colleges, churches, groups, and try to convince them to stop the hate speech. And he had an organization. And he came here, and we all went to Jerry Falwell's church, and this had been set up ahead of time. And Jerry, in fact, Mel had been a ghostwriter for Jerry Falwell. You know, I'm talking about Jerry Falwell, Thomas Rhodes Baptist Church, the biggest anti-gay place in Virginia, at least. And we were all supposed to be a bunch of us from Mel's group and a bunch from Jerry's, and we were supposed to meet and have dinner. I grew up here. I knew that what Jerry was all about. And I told Mel, I told the group, "We're not going to have dinner. Because they will not eat with us. They would not eat with our kind of people."
Yeah.
Dinner was canceled, of course. We got bottles of water. We sat around and kind of talked. But I realized after that Mel's calling was to go and confront in your face. almost like the ACT UP group that started 35 years ago about AIDS. My calling is to learn your language, show you who I and my people are, and win you over by love. Win you over by finding out that gay people are not bare butt drag queens in the parades. Only.
Only.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people, they will tell you they've never known a gay person. And you say, oh yeah, you have. You may not have known, but you've known. But once they have a face, a person, and a label, they have a different confrontation they have to come up with then. How do I reconcile that neighbor of mine that will come and sit with my elderly mother, knowing she lives with a woman, knowing you hear them say, I love you all the time? How can I be anti-gay with this situation? So the challenge is knowing when to speak up and in what language. I had a neighbor today say, you look really familiar. And she said something about, I just feel like I've seen you somewhere. And she said that, and I said, well, back in 2000, I was in the news a lot because of, that's right, because whenever I see you, I think rainbows. But she was very positive about it.
Yeah.
Very positive. So the challenge is simply to be myself and to be comfortable in my skin and in my spirit and be able to relate to people.
That's great.
Almost.
So,
I think one of the challenges for this community is to find a focus. To find a focus.
Too many focuses?
Hmm?
Do you find that there's too many focuses?
I'm not sure there is a focus.
Oh, really?
Again, from the perception.
Well, of course.
And I've only been back here 2 years. I retired from Charlotte, MCC, Charlotte, North Carolina, and came back here, and they were without a pastor, and I eventually became the part-time pastor here. So I was gone for a while in between there, but always connected with the people here. Pride is coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah.
I haven't seen much advertisement about that. I haven't seen much publicity about it.
I haven't heard of it.
We have a meeting tomorrow night, a phone conference with one of the leaders of it. If you want a good turnout for something like that, you need to get it out there.
Social media.
1 year there wasn't one, I understand. It just never came together. And so there needs to be that focus, not just for entertainment and fun, but also for education and for to being there so people can know who we are and can know who we are among the community themselves. I don't see a lot of activities. Michael Smith has his brunches, and I think that's great. I love him. I love Michael. But there needs to be more of those kind of activities, too, that have a place for a lot of people. I just don't sense a lot of direction, I guess is the best way I can put it.
I can see.
Now, if something happened, if there was another issue like in 2000 with the shooting, I'm sure this community would come together in a heartbeat. I have no question about that. But it shouldn't take something like that to bring us together.
It's an unfortunate part of humanity, I think.
And I love the fact that Sister Project is going on because a lot of people, especially newer people coming into the community, into the town, don't know anything about this, don't know anything about our district. As a town, they come in and they see Roanoke, this little town, 100,000 people, city. And so they need to know that there's been a history and that we've always been here. We've always been here.
And you mentioned that you preached in Charlotte?
When I left here, I felt like it was time to move on.
So you were here? Sorry.
I was here 10 years. And then I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, and pastored the MCC there for 8 years.
About what year?
I left here in 2008.
You left here in 2008, and you were there for 8 years?
8 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I retired, because I was 65, and I wanted to be back here in town where my wife was. We'd been back and forth all the time. And that lasted for about a year and a half, and I started speaking when they were without a pastor. And then when they began a pastoral search, I did not want to apply. I didn't want to be back in the office. But the night before the applications were due. I was telling God what God needed to do, because they really needed someone here. And this quiet, still voice said, "You're here." So I quickly filled out the paperwork, and there were four applicants, and they chose me. So, yeah. And the Charlotte community, as large as Charlotte is, large city as it is, has many of the same challenges that Roanoke has.
I'm not shocked.
Mm-mm. Like I said, I've seen it in L.A., I've seen it in Ventura, I've seen it in Charlotte. And unless there's a strong person or a strong group or a strong event to pull people together, then you have all of these little groups out.
And not a lot to unify everybody. Mm-mm.
And whatever one hears about this group, they get upset, and then this group hears something else, and there's no combined communication.
That's a lot of point.
For example, I can't believe that we don't have any kind of publication here. For years, we had something called the Pink Pages, which is a great way of getting news out, informing the community about nationwide, worldwide events, and that disappeared somewhere along the way.
When did this go on?
This was Pink Pages. I'm sure there's some in the archives. That was a really big activity in the 1996 or before till about probably 2004, 5, 6. Because right now, if you all were going to have a program about the Southwest History Project, mm-hmm. how would people know about that?
We would have to go to the newspaper, and that would be a challenge.
You could put it on the internet, but a lot of people aren't on the internet. But if they're not on your site, or have some connection. Whereas with a printed publication, but a print and online, in Charlotte they have something called Q-Notes. And it comes out in a magazine form or a paper form, and there's actually some of them in the street at the boxes where you get newspapers.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really exciting. I mean, it is. It's exciting.
That's a good idea.
To walk by and see that. But if there were a publication of some kind, then open and affirming groups could advertise. There could be opinions. There could be interviews with people. So I just hope that's something that maybe will come about down the road.
And at MCC, do you guys try and obviously community isn't the title. How do you incorporate the community? I know you mentioned you do NA groups and you have mm-hmm. the diversity mm-hmm. here. And
the food pantry.
And the food pantry. Yeah, you basically just answered my question.
That's okay. Well, and then hopefully being open to, at one time when Pride had a committee, they would use our building to meet and plan things. We have had other groups at other times that would make our facility available, is what I'm trying to say. We have in the past gone out to things like Relay for Life as a team. We have tried to be present in years past in other places, and we're working on that more now again to get up so that people know that we're here. Quick story, when we bought this building and we were looking at the lettering outside, I'm sure you saw the name on the outside of the church, a bunch of us were sitting around and we said, gosh, it's going to take a lot of money to put those letters up. And one of the women said, "Can I buy a vow?" Which reminded us of, you know, Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, of course.
Well, as it turned out, a lot of different people bought letters. The bowling team at that time paid for community.
Really?
That word. Another woman, her son had died, and she paid for his initials. So it kind of involved a lot of different groups like that.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool because mm-hmm. I noticed... So the sense of community within the church is just, it sounds astounding, especially when we were walking through the church, you showed me the cross that was made mm-hmm. from the rose trellis mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and all of these little relics that come together mm-hmm. through time. What would you say is a big issue in the church today?
Rebuilding. The attendance had dropped off and... We're in the process of rebuilding that and reminding people we're still here reach out. Like I said, we have some folks who are coming in from other places that we didn't quite expect that are here. We want to start reaching out to the neighborhood more. People know there's been a church on this corner for over 100 years.
Of course.
And I'm not sure a lot of the local neighbors have quite figured out who we are, even though we've been here 14, 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to start. But we've done things before, like one year, the time of the year when you change your smoke detector batteries.
Yeah.
We went out through the neighborhood and gave out batteries.
Oh, that's a creative idea.
One of the gentlemen in church has a garden, and he wants to do a bigger garden. And this summer he wants to be able to bring fruits and vegetables and just have them out there beside the door available. Because this neighborhood does not have good access to fresh fruit, fresh vegetables in grocery stores. So we're trying to branch out that way so that it's not just getting people in to fill my pews.
Oh, of course.
Well, that would be great. But but letting people know that this is a house of prayer for all people. It's a place for all people. And we care about more than just your soul. You know, we care about more than just you being able to say the Lord's Prayer in correct order.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hungry, if you're needy, if your smoke detector won't go off and your house catches on fire, then all of the Bible verses in the world aren't going to help a whole lot. And I'm very much a biblicist, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Any Sunday you come, you can be sure of two things in a church I'm pastoring.
Yeah.
Number one, communion will always be offered. And number two, you'll hear from the Word.
Yes.
MCC has in its bylaws that communion is offered every Sunday.
That's awesome. I grew up very scripture heavily, mm-hmm. So.
Well,
and
place,
I can hear just from what you're from you talking. I hear the script. Uh-huh. I actually hear biblical verses. You paraphrasing things.
See,
so.
I'm talking a language you understand.
Yeah.
And you understand it's a good communication here. If I had come in and tried to talk totally in political issues. Would totally be me. I'm not anti-political, don't get me wrong. But if I tried to talk in super high church terms, you just told me the faith you grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't use a lot of high ecclesiastical terms. So a lot of this meant figuring out how you can talk to people. Now, when I retired, my bookshelves looked kind of empty. When I retired, I didn't think I'd ever be pastoring again. And I gave away 15 boxes of church Bible scripture books to fellow pastors. I gave away probably another 8 boxes of fiction books. So when I realized I was going to have all these bookshelves to fill up again, because I used to have them full,
yeah.
I thought, okay, we'll have to work on this.
That's cool. Well.
Are we finished?
I think so. Well, is there anything else that you would really like to share, say?
I'm just excited about the project. I'm excited to see what goes on with it and be involved in any way I can be or that we can be.
Mm-hmm.
I donated some papers to the library, to the room there. I've not been to see the gathering, the group yet. In fact, I did that, I think, when I was still in Charlotte. Somebody commented about something they needed. And I'm really looking forward to, I love the class. You know, you have a group that's involved with us.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to working with the class at Orono College. So those are fun things.
Mm-hmm.
I often would speak to a group of social work students from Radford that would come, and I'd be explaining to them how you deal with the LGBTQ families. I've spoken at Holland's a couple of times. And I just like the fact that our church and our community is putting the word out about who we really are to so many people.
Planting the seed, as mm-hmm. I like to say.
I like the fact putting the face with the description, with the life. Because once I know your story, I have a hard time being upset with your group.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm glad you asked me to do this. I'm sorry that Richard couldn't do it, but I enjoyed it.
I am too, but this has really been awesome, and I'm very, very happy and excited that we were able to interview you and have this documented for years and years and years to come. Because, like you said, the history is so important. Mm-hmm. And as a young gay man, I am very naive in the history of all the people and all the steps mm-hmm. and all the events that led to me having so much privilege
mm-hmm.
in my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
as you were saying, you never even talked about being gay. Mm-hmm. Never even really passed your mind, and that I empathize now. I understand, and so it's, these stories are so important.
It is. It's very important that it's important that you hear them, but it's also important that we share them.
Exactly.
I had some notes to make. I was going to try to remember to talk about this and this and this, and I was making phone calls about the funeral. Uh-huh. Didn't get back to them, and so when I first sat down here, I thought, what is he going to ask me? But it helps me going back through the history of some of this too.
Yeah, it helps you. It's always fun to remember
and to put it in perspective.
Yeah,
and realize that had I not conducted all the funerals I did during the heyday of AIDS, especially for people I didn't know, I wouldn't have had the ability to be able to fill in where I needed now. And until we were talking tonight, I never made that connection mm-hmm. of why I could do the other so easily. So thank you.
Of course. Thank you. This has been great.